Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is the wonderfully impressive, well-paid Jesse McKinley, the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Welcome back, Jesse. Always great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Jesse, you've been making all kinds of news. In fact, I'm astounded that you're here because, you know, every time I turn the television on, there's your face. So as you said in the Times, as Cuomo sought $4 million book deal, AIDS hit damaging death toll. I am not a superhero, Governor. So you came out with a couple of stories here. One is he got $4 million. I wrote a book called Me and Mario. I didn't see any $4 million.
Well, that's a pretty hefty payday. And that reporting is compliments of Alexander Alter. And Liz Harris is another of our excellent culture/publishing reporters who were able to kind of manage to get that pretty well sourced in terms of the bids that were going for the governor's book. And then obviously the overlay that was of the nursing home report kind of being worked on, so to speak, and with these numbers being excised at the last minute, that the interest for us was the contemporaneousness of all of this. You know, a lot of this was happening at the same time, whereby the governor was pitching a book, getting some pretty substantial seven-figure offers, and at the same time, his staff kind of working to kind of repair or at least safeguard his reputation vis-a-vis the nursing home issue, which has proven to be a remarkably tenacious controversy for the governor. And for the listeners who don't really know the ins and outs of it, the basic gist of it is that the governor and his staff basically refused to issue kind of a full accounting of the number of residents of nursing homes who had died in the pandemic for months and months and months and months until earlier this year when, after a report from the state attorney general, they finally came clean and revealed kind of a much higher number of deaths of those residents. So the timing last summer of this book deal going through, this book deal being pitched, and the governor's staff kind of working to, if not downplay, at least shortchange the truth vis-a-vis the number of deaths that had occurred in nursing homes, the kind of coincidentality of all of that was the focus of this morning's story in the Times.
So, Jesse McKinley, are there ethical questions about his accepting $4 million for a book while he's governor of New York?
Well, the ethics, leaving the ethics of it aside, there were questions raised, I think, by our reporting, namely that the governor had used some junior staffers to do some minor clerical work on the book, that he had enlisted Melissa DeRosa, his top aide, as a kind of de facto editor on the book, that he had used another top aide, Stephanie Benton, to kind of facilitate some clerical work on the book, all of which would seemingly run afoul of the famous public officers law, which forbids, you know, any use of public resources, which, of course, taxpayers like myself, and not yourself because you live in Massachusetts, but certainly New York taxpayers pay for. So these are public resources, you know, taxpayer-paid employees and or taxpayer-paid equipment for the pursuit of a private profit, which in this case seems to have been more than $4 million. So once again, doing that sort of thing, using public resources for a private enterprise is strictly forbidden. So we'll see whether or not that results in any kind of additional fallout for the governor.
So I have so many ways I can go, Jesse, but I did want to mention to you that I work for WAMC, which is a New York State corporation, and I certainly do pay taxes in New York. I just wanted to mention that.
I stand corrected.
The pain of paying and also being accused is too much, just too much. Okay, so let me ask you, how much trouble is Cuomo in?
Well, I am not a lawyer, so I can't speak to legality. I think I am a political reporter, though, and I can speak to the kind of politics of this. You know, I think that the last 2.5 months have been perhaps the worst, undoubtedly the worst kind of political months of the governor's, you know, nearly 40-year career in politics, with the exception maybe of him losing the Democratic nomination in 2002. But, you know, I think it's particularly stark when you look at how high the governor was flying this time last year. You know, in early April of 2020, he was being hailed as a pandemic hero, you know, that he had very ably guided the state through one of the darkest periods of its recent history. That he was saving lives, that he was an efficient truth teller who was being hailed not only by Democrats, but even by some Republicans and certainly by some, you know, progressives on his left who have not been fans of him. Kind of this giant chorus of people saying that the governor had been doing a great job. And now you flash forward to 2021. You've got multiple investigations, including one overseen by Tish James at the state attorney general's office. You've got a federal investigation into his handling of the nursing home data. You've got another investigation aimed at a possible impeachment coming out of the state assembly. So taken in toto, those are all pretty serious developments for a guy who was one of the most popular politicians in America this time last year. Now, that being said, the caveat, of course, is that the governor has said he will not resign. There seems to be somewhat of a political bulwark for him in the assembly at this point. They have not moved to impeach him, which would be a way of removing him from office. His poll numbers are stable, if certainly diminished. And keep in mind that there are, you know, portions of the electorate in New York that still feel very strongly that he is a good governor and a good guy. So while optically it has not been a great period for Governor Cuomo, in practical circumstances, he's still in power and he still has a base of support that seems to be sticking with him despite all these scandals.
Jesse McKinley of the New York Times, could I go back and pick your brain as to what those polls are showing? You said his polls are sort of holding up. What can you tell me about that?
Well, I think, once again, I'm not a pollster, but in looking at the numbers from the Morning Consult, which I think came out a few days ago, looking at a recent Siena, looking at a Quinnipiac, the takeaway seems to be that, you know, his approval rating is kind of sticking in the, you know, upper 40s, lower 50s, which is, you know, not bad. It's not great, but it's not terrible. But then the schism here is that when voters are asked whether or not they want him to continue on to a fourth term, that number really plummets. So in terms of his long-term political prospects, I think those look fairly dim at this moment. But, of course, politics changes and people's opinions change. And then there's the critical question that some of these polls have asked, where they said, should the governor resign and or be impeached? And by and large, the number of people saying that he should not resign is higher than the number of people saying he should resign. So for the governor, that is a good number to point at. Now, keep in mind as well, and I'm offering a lot of caveats in this conversation.
This is good.
Keep in mind as well that, you know, reporting continues to cause trouble for him, you know, as evidenced by our story this morning, Thursday morning, in the Times, by the reporting last week by the Times Union regarding him using the testing program to basically offer favors to members of his family and VIPs. The reporting in the Washington Post earlier this week, which elaborated on that testing program, which they obviously reported on as well. So the drumbeat of bad news continues for the governor. And as I was saying before, it has been a remarkably rough few months for a guy who previously seemed pretty impervious.
On the other hand, Jesse McKinley, let me put it this way. Most politicians would give their right arm to be above the 50% line in terms of their approval rating. And it seems like he's flirting with that, right?
Yeah, if he's not right at 50, he's close. And, you know, and honestly, keep in mind, too, though, this is a Democratic state, you know. So, you know, when you have a 2-to-1 advantage in terms of people of your own party, namely Democrats in the state of New York, Getting the 50 is not as difficult as, say, if you were running in Oklahoma. You know, so,
right.
So, you know, he's helped by the base, and he's helped by core constituencies that have stuck with him through thick and thin and feel like they know him and know that Cuomo brand. You know, I kind of harken back to a story we did at the end of February where we were talking to people about the governor's personality and his governing style, which I think you would agree, and most people would agree, is brusque, to put it mildly, downright abrasive and unpleasant and abusive and toxic for other people. That would be their reckoning of it. So in writing about that, we spoke to Josh Vlasto, who used to be his chief of staff, and Josh's argument was, look, you know, people know who Cuomo is, and they have decided they like him, and they don't mind that he's a bully, and they don't mind that he's mean sometimes. They like that he gets things done. So that is one school of thought, that he has, you know, won election three times, and that even though his personality may be unpleasant, people don't seem to mind that so long as he gets the job done. Now, keep in mind, and this is yet another caveat in a caveat-filled conversation, I would say that reporting and that comment from Josh Vlasto came before this series of very unpleasant, very troubling, very upsetting sexual harassment allegations that the governor has been facing, and now we're kind of in the double digits. So whether or not the voters stick with him through those sorts of allegations, which involve unpleasant, or alleged unpleasant actions towards women who were either in his employ or simply, you know, in his presence, whether or not voters want to stick with him after those allegations are vetted, we shall see.
Yeah, well, you know, there was this whole question first. He said to me, he said to you, he said to everybody, I'm going to run for another term. Then came everybody yelling, resign, resign, resign. Now, he said, I'm not going to resign. And I think there are a lot of people who think he won't run for that fourth term. I am not one of them. I'm predicting he's assuming it goes along like it's going along now. He'll run again. And then the question becomes, who will run against him? Have you done any thinking about that?
Well, you know, the name that has come up again and again is Letitia James, the state attorney general. But, you know, I don't have any solid reporting showing that that is in motion or even being seriously considered at this point. But I think, Alan, you're not completely off. I think that certainly the governor would like to run again. I think that the fourth term is kind of the elusive goal that his father was not able to attain. And I think in his heart of hearts, the governor thinks he's done a pretty good job. And I think he thinks that he deserves a fourth term on some level. Now, I think that thinking was probably more solid before these multiple scandals engulfed his administration. I think you would agree that the governor is not short of ego. I think he certainly thinks that he is a good leader and a smart guy and is good at this job. So I don't think he has discounted the idea of a fourth term at all. Now, another kind of water cooler conspiracy theory is that perhaps what the governor is doing at this juncture is keeping the idea of a fourth term alive simply as kind of a bargaining chip, so to speak, right? That he could potentially, if things got really bad for him politically, say, okay, well, I won't run for a fourth term. And that would be a way to avoid the, you know, indignity of having to resign or be impeached, but would also signal to voters that he realizes it's time to leave office. So that is once again, not supported by actual reporting, but is certainly something that people are chattering about in kind of political circles in Albany.
I want to go back to something you said about the legislature, about the assembly not impeaching him. I am totally confused. I'm pretty good at this stuff, and I think about it a lot, but I have no idea where Speaker Carl Hastie is. In the beginning, it looked to me like he wanted him out. Now, I get the feeling that, you know, some people are reporting that Hastie may be protecting Cuomo. What do you think?
Well, I think if you talk to Hastie's camp, they reject that wholeheartedly. Hastie's people say, look, we started an impeachment investigation of the governor. That is a very serious allegation or a very serious step. We are taking this very seriously. We're doing our due diligence. We've hired a reputable outside firm, Davis Polk, to take a look. It's being led by this guy, Greg Andrus, who is a heavy hitter and a serious prosecutor. So from the Assembly side and from Carl Tracy's camp, they reject that wholeheartedly. They say, we're not protecting the governor. We're doing our work. It may not be moving as fast as you would like, but we are being methodical. These are very serious allegations, and we need to take them seriously. I think that that is as credible an argument as any. Now, by the same token, as you mentioned, from the outside, there are people that say, look, you know, these are serious allegations. If Governor Cuomo was the CEO of a corporation, or if Governor Cuomo, was another sort of politician, he probably already would have been fired from a private sector job, or he would have resigned, you know, from a different political post. But once again, Albany is Albany, and there are power dynamics. I think perhaps even the budget negotiations, which have been going on, have given people pause that they feel that they need the governor to help in terms of getting a budget done. And so they need to, you know, take their time with any sort of investigation. So I think all of these things kind of play into the cosmology of what's going on. But certainly Carl Hastie's camp would say, no, we're taking this very seriously and very methodically, and we'll get our conclusion when we get our conclusion.
Okay, let's go to the budget. What seem to be the issues?
Well, you know, I think money is the big one, and to an extent, in terms of drama, a lot of the drama was drained from the budget negotiations with the election of Joe Biden, who rode very much the rescue of New York by providing somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 billion in federal aid, to help this state get out of a hole. You know, the governor had said that it was going to be a $15 billion hole. At last report, with that federal money, that has shrunk to about 2.5. I think what you'll see is a number of kind of small tax increases, probably some targeting, obviously, the wealthy, but nothing as extreme as some of the ideas that were being floated by more progressive lawmakers for kind of permanent taxes on the wealthy that would, provide billions and billions and billions of dollars for years to come. I think that you will obviously see action on solitary confinement. Obviously, the marijuana legalization is a big deal. It won't technically be a part of the budget, but it's already been signed. But, you know, it's been part of the budget season. And there will be some rent relief in the budget for people who have been displaced or hurt or disadvantaged by the coronavirus pandemic. But in terms of kind of major, gigantic policy initiatives, this year will be a little bit underwhelming in that regard, particularly when you look at years like 2019, when there was just a giant kind of nonstop progressive agenda, after the Democrats took control of the Senate. I think this will be a little bit more nibbling at the edges, certainly addressing the financial stuff. Certainly marijuana is a big deal. Solitary confinement is a big deal. And police reform, which had been announced as early as last summer that the governor wanted to do that, that'll probably be wrapped up in any announcement as well. So, I don't think that they'll get it. Obviously, they're not going to get it on time. I would guess timing-wise, they'll finalize everything by early next week.
Has Cuomo been weakened, as many people thought he would be, with all these accusations that he couldn't go into the negotiations? What's happening?
Well, Governor Staff says, no, everything's smooth sailing. We're doing everything we can. We're working 14, 18, 16-hour days, depending on the account you hear. They're probably working 24 hours a day because, as you know, budget season never, you know, it is a very busy period. And yeah. You know, everyone should thank every budget-level staffer in New York State for very hard work, because it's a lot of pages and a lot of documents and a lot of lawyering and a lot of work. So thank you to them. But I don't think the governor has been as demanding in this budget season. I think that there are schools of thought that he's been willing to negotiate much, much more, you know, has been much more willing to negotiate because of his current political travails. At the same time, knowing Cuomo, he is not, he's not a wilting violet. He will certainly make his opinions known. And I think even with the marijuana legalization, there were back and forth right up to the 11th hour with that, with concerns from the governor's office being expressed to lawmakers. So I don't think he's been as vociferous as he may have been in past years, but I don't think he's been completely absent.
So, Jesse McKinley, where did he disagree with the legislature on marijuana reform?
There was a lot of back and forth on the issue of impaired driving. I'm not completely conversant with all the ins and outs, but there were concerns, I think, from some more moderate lawmakers that that the law enforcement have the proper tools in order to, address people that might get stoned and get behind the wheel, which obviously is not a good thing to do. And I think certainly the in past years, the issue of how much money was going to go to, historically over-policed communities has hung stuff up. I think that the assembly led by Crystal People Stokes got what they wanted on those points. And the deal that came out of it will effectively make, smoking marijuana in public legal as of this conversation. Not that I had anything to do with it, but as of this moment, that is now a legal activity in New York, as long as you're not smoking in a place that you're not supposed to be smoking. And, the actual industry of this, the dispensaries and the pot on demand recreationally, that's a little ways off, but it's a big change for New York, and it's also something that New York is following other states. I think we're the 16th state to do this, but certainly New York is the fourth largest state. California's had this for a while, but it's significant that it will legalize something that for generations caught a lot of people in the law enforcement net and cause a lot of problems for people, and it's a major change. So I think that is a significant accomplishment that the legislature can celebrate and that Mr. Cuomo was all too happy to sign.
Let me ask about the issue of marijuana reform. People Stokes has done an upfront job, obviously. Is her relationship from the Niagara area copus mentis with the speaker from New York City?
I think that Crystal People Stokes and Carl Hastie get along well. I think that there is a great deal of respect between the two of them. Obviously, there's different priorities, right, for New York City voters and Buffalo voters. But I think that they do see eye to eye on a lot of stuff. Coming back to marijuana for a second,
sure.
I think it will be interesting to see the impact on neighboring states such as Massachusetts with New York coming into the market. I liken it a little bit to the casino issue, whereby there was a number of states that were legalizing casinos in recent years, going back almost a decade now, and the way that kind of parsed up the pie, so to speak, both in terms of tax revenue and in terms of, sales of that. In that case, sales of casino chips, and in this case, the sales of marijuana. So I think it will be interesting to see how neighboring states kind of poach and cannibalize each other's markets in this new reality.
I'm really glad you're bringing that up, because the 13% sales tax on marijuana sales from New York is less than the 20% in Massachusetts. So do you think our people will be going your way now?
Who knows? You would have to look at the traffic on 90, I guess. But certainly prices of marijuana I'm not a consumer, but I think prices of marijuana have increased as demand has increased. And certainly it has been good for some states to tax, although I don't think the tax revenue has ever really match some of the projections, which once again kind of likens it to casino betting, which, they always kind of overpromise and underdeliver a little bit with those industries.
I want to ask you real quickly about cameras in the courtroom. Obviously, a lot of people are watching the George Floyd trial. It's always been a big issue. Any movement that you see?
I haven't followed that issue carefully, but obviously the George Floyd case is getting back-to-back, kind of wall-to-wall coverage, not only in the networks, but on our website at nytimes.com and other newspapers. It is fascinating to watch, and I just personally, I think it's a great thing for transparency to be able to see, you know, the way the legal system works and the way, you know, with all of its warts and all, you know, some of it is fascinating, some of it is vexing. But I think the more things in general that the public can see about the way, you know, governmental systems work, whether they be judicial or legislative or executive, I think the more the better.
Jesse McKinley, tell me about the gerrymander. Obviously, New York has a commission that's supposed to look at this stuff and keep it out of politics. What do you think?
Well, I think keeping district lines out of politics is a challenge, Alan. I will put it that way. I think that gerrymandering has a long and unfortunate tradition in this country. I think that in the state of New York, it will be very interesting to see, depending on how many congressional seats we have, for instance, whether it's 25 or 26, we'll certainly lose one or two, exactly how difficult lives get for Republican congresspeople. You know, there had been some chatter that perhaps Elise Stefanik's district in the North Country and Claudia Tenney's Utica-based district could somehow get smushed together in some of these new lines, and that would actually hamstring the Republicans, because then you'd have two prominent Republican women kind of vying for a single seat. You know, none of these decisions have been finalized yet, but obviously there's a lot of chatter as to where those lines are going to go and whether or not the Republicans are going to end up on the short end of the stick with this one.
Jesse McKinley, you are marvelous. Really, we are so lucky to have you with us. We're out of time. Our guest has been Jesse McKinley, the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Jesse, thanks so much for being here. Who knew that all of this stuff would be revolving around your head and you had to tell us what's going on? Thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime, Alan. Thanks.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.